How's it going, everyone? It is October 28th, 2020, and welcome to Radio Laurier News at 9, the show where we cover local, national, and international news every Wednesday. My name is Jeffrey, and I'll be starting everyone off this week with some local news stories. Let's go! So in some local news, a Grand River Transit public art display has been wrongfully used to show a hate sign in Cambridge. According to Peter Zink, the director of transit services for the region of Waterloo, the art display was misused to display a swastika. The hate sign was quickly reported less than an hour and a half after it was put up. According to the reports, the hate symbol was reported at 9 a.m. this Sunday and was quickly dealt with by GRT staff. GRT staff have reported the incident to Waterloo Regional Police. This is the first reported misuse of the public art display, and it is unlikely that it will be taken down unless another incident occurs. With regards to some more positive news, let's give a big shout out to Laurier student Danny Christina, who just released her first EP. The singer and songwriter is debuting her first EP, which is called Aura. During the writing and recording process of the EP, Christina worked with Juliana Hadanak, her sister, who together co-wrote the first Canadian-Croatian opera, which premiered in Kitchener back in 2018. Grammy-nominated Trevor James Anderson also helped Christina with the EP. Danny describes that having Anderson join her after working on some big albums was great, as he brought his expertise with him. The EP can currently be streamed on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, Deezer, and Amazon. Congratulations, Christina! In other news, two people have been charged in connection to fires that were set at several Kitchener-Waterloo Walmarts. The fires have allegedly caused millions of dollars in damage, according to Waterloo Regional Police Service. The Waterloo Regional Police made the arrests around 5:30 a.m. on Saturday and announced them later that night. On Sunday, the police revealed that a 21-year-old man from Paris, Ontario, and a young person have been charged. The names of the accused have not yet been released. Tips from the public, as well as several eyewitness reports, helped police make the arrests. The two men now face several charges, including arson, disregard for human life, and discharging a false fire alarm. The fires were reported Tuesday night at three locations, Ottawa Street South and Fisher Hallman Road in Kitchener, Ottawa Street North and River Road in Kitchener, and Bridgeport Road East and Weber Street South in Waterloo. Police have made a statement in which they said that the fires were started in the toilet paper and paper towel aisles. Damage to the three locations is estimated at $12 million. Police have asked the public to contact them if they have any more tips or eyewitness reports to help them with the investigation. $12 million in damage, I mean, that is quite something. Unfortunately, it is looking like Halloween this year is going to be a bit different than it has ever been before. Without trick-or-treating, keeping the Halloween spirit alive is going to be a new process. That is why a local production company is looking to keep the spirit of Halloween alive this October with a virtual dance party. The Tricks and Treats virtual Halloween party will be hosted by Thunderstorm Productions and will feature family-friendly music and videos. Even better, the event will be free for everyone to participate. The owner of Thunderstorm, Eric Hushley, said the intent is to spread some smiles for those looking to celebrate. Big shout out to Eric for spreading some positivity during these difficult times. According to Hushley, Thunderstorm has been hosting virtual dance parties since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Company DJs have been graciously giving their time every Friday and Saturday night for dance parties on the online streaming platform Twitch TV. Huge props to the DJs for donating their time. The move from in-person to virtual parties was initially an adjustment for Thunderstorm. Hushley has said his channel is at the point where they can host multiple DJs at the same time, mixing music for listeners while hosting viewer interaction. In other news, the Ontario government has announced that they will be providing over $6.5 million in social service relief funding to increase capacity in the emergency shelter system and to support the construction of modular housing units on surplus lands. The funds have been used to create 225 new shelter spaces, which bring the Waterloo Region shelter system to a new capacity of 400 spaces. This new funding has come as part of Ontario's Social Service Relief Fund. The fund has allocated over $241 million for municipalities and Indigenous communities across Ontario. The current MPP for Kitchener-Conestoga, Mike Harris Jr., and the current MPP for Kitchener-South, Hespeler, Amy Fee, delivered the news on Monday. Harris has stated that the provincial government is committed to protecting Waterloo region's most vulnerable populations. Harris talked about how the new phase of funding will help better long-term housing solutions and meet the ongoing needs related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Harris has made a statement in which she has said, "Here in Waterloo region, it will help with rent relief and operational supports for isolation, recovery, and expanded shelter programs. It will also aid in the construction of modular supportive housing units." According to statistics, between March and May, the occupancy rate of local shelters in Waterloo region was 130% due to extra pressure from the pandemic. The shelter's private and semi-private housing style needed to deal with COVID-19 is much more expensive than regular housing, making this new government funding important in keeping cases down in the Waterloo region. The reality is that no one level of government can accomplish stable housing for our unsheltered populations without an entire community response, said Karen Redman, the chair of the Regional Municipality of Waterloo. The Region of Waterloo is pleased to use this funding to support our lead service providers and to address both the immediate and long-term needs of homeless residents, said Redman. Redman has announced that short-term accommodations with private and semi-private rooms will include the former Inn of Waterloo Tower and the Cooperative Residence. The Inn of Waterloo Tower will be operated by the House of Friendship and will offer space for 115 single adult men. The Waterloo Cooperative Residence will offer space for up to 80 people and will operate 24/7. Redman also mentioned that St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Kitchener will be run by the YWCA Kitchener-Waterloo and will offer space for 30 individuals with plans to expand to a capacity of 60. Now let's talk about a bit of a more sensitive topic. So race has become a prevalent issue worldwide over the past couple months. Police reform has been the target of millions worldwide, and this week the Waterloo Regional Police have become involved in the discussion. The Waterloo Regional Police Service have released use of force statistics with race-based data for the first time in their history. Unfortunately, the numbers released by police are not exactly encouraging. The stats show that from January to June of 2020, there have been 244 instances where police have taken out a gun, a taser, a baton, or have used any other means of physical force on a subject. Of the 244 incidents, 161 involved Caucasian subjects, representing only about 66% of all instances. This number at first glance might seem reasonable, but considering white people make up 80% of Waterloo Region's population, the number becomes a bit more questionable. Black people were subject to physical force from police 40 out of the 244 times, making up roughly 16% of all altercations. Black people only make up 3% of Waterloo Region's population. These statistics show that Black people are extremely overrepresented in use of force incidents by more than 5 times in comparison with the representation of the Waterloo Region population. 5 times. This really needs to stop. This kind of behavior has been going on for far too long, and it feels like a continuous loop. At least that is my opinion. A closer look into the data shows that 16 of the 40 incidents involving police using physical force against Black people stem from the same 3 incidents. 16 from 3 incidents. This is just unacceptable behavior from the Waterloo Regional Police, and I think they need to answer for these statistics. And that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening, and I will now pass it off to Ananya, who will be talking about some national news stories. Thanks so much, guys.
Good morning. I'm your anchor, Ananya, and I will take you over to the national news of the week. The very big news of the week for all the international students entering Canada. IRCC has changed the travel exemptions for international students traveling to Canada. Beginning October 20, 2020, international students may be able to travel to Canada if their designated learning institution, DLI, has an approved COVID-19 readiness plan in place. To be able to enter Canada as a student, you must meet two requirements. That are, first, you must have a valid study permit or a letter of introduction that shows you were approved for a study permit. Second, you must be attending a designated learning institution with a COVID-19 readiness plan approved by its province or territory. When students travel to Canada and meet the border officer, the officer will look at several factors that include your reason to travel, your ability to complete a 14-day quarantine period as soon as your arrival at the destination, if you either have time to complete your quarantine before you physically attend classes or can study online during your quarantine. Alongside, students must bring a valid study permit or a port of entry letter of introduction that shows they were approved for a study permit. A valid letter of acceptance from a designated learning institution with a COVID readiness plan approved by its province or territory, and a proof that they have enough money to support themselves and any family members who come with them to Canada. Now, talking about the Wilfrid Laurier University, it has submitted its COVID-19 readiness plan to Ontario Ministry of Colleges and Universities for approval. Alongside with many other institutions in Ontario, Laurier is still waiting for the government's final decision. Once the plan is approved, Laurier will be added to the list of approved DLIs on the IRCC website. The Laurier's Safe Travel Arrival and Quarantine program is designed in a way that prioritizes your health and safety. The quarantine program will include transportation from Toronto Pearson International Airport to Laurier. Second, 14 days of accommodation in Laurier's residence on the Waterloo campus. Third, 3 meals a day delivered to your room. Fourth, daily monitoring of your health and wellness. Fifth, access to health and emergency medical services. And last but not the least, support for remote learning and student engagement and testing for the COVID-19 virus. However, Laurier does not guarantee students entry to Canada, but the border officer does. Therefore, learning and understanding each requirement before planning travel is extremely crucial. To know more about the travel to Canada, you must visit www.canada.ca. Moving on, Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has announced $214 million for Canadian coronavirus vaccine research early this weekend. According to the Global News, Trudeau said on Friday that $173 million would go to Quebec-based Medicago, while Vancouver's Precision Nanosystems would receive $18.2 million for development and testing. The deal with Medicago includes up to 76 million doses of its vaccine candidates, as well as funds to set up a production facility in Quebec City. A further $23 million will go towards the National Research Council of Canada. The federal government has spent more than $1 billion to secure doses of a vaccine against the virus. Deals have been struck with half a dozen pharmaceuticals giants, and Canada is also a part of an international vaccine alliance through COVAX. Trudeau has stressed that no vaccine would be available until Health Canada officials are certain that immunization is safe. His announcement came after Canada posted a record increase in new COVID-19 cases on Thursday, with nearly 2,800 people newly diagnosed with the illness. On Wednesday, Trudeau said that the second wave of coronavirus pandemic is already underway in Canada and urged vigilance. This was partially contradicted on Friday by Alberta's Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Dina Hinshaw, who said that the second wave of COVID-19 has not hit the province. Moving on, a Canadian writer and artist revered in Canada's LGBTQ arts scene has been found dead after going missing in his native New Brunswick earlier this month. Richard Wagon's body was found on Friday. 10 days later, he was reported missing. Police said Wagon was last seen near his home in downtown Fredericton on Monday, October 12, and he was reported missing the next day. The author was 55 and was born in St. John, New Brunswick. He had recently returned to his home province from Montreal to serve as writer-in-residence at his alma mater, the University of Brunswick. And now, as we all know that winters are approaching, the negative thoughts, anxiety, and depression comes with a gloomy season. To those, winter hassle, a pandemic is now added, with all its heartbreaking life limitations. As reported by the Globe and Mail, surveys suggest that many Canadians are already feeling more anxious and depressed than before the country's spring lockdown. The idea that winter itself and the lack of the light that comes with the season will make most of our moods worse is debated in psychology. There are a few tips that I would like to personally suggest when experiencing Canadian winters are that you should always enjoy outdoor winter activities to get moving. Though I know that it would be less possible for everyone of us during these unprecedented COVID times, but getting out for some fresh air is always refreshing. Other than that, work out at home to avoid the cold weather. This is an effective way to stay fit and warm and definitely find a workout buddy to make it interesting. And drink plenty of water. Also, making sure that you prevent the spread and contraction of the common cold and flu has always been important and is even more important now during the pandemic. Include vitamin C-rich food in your diet like oranges, lemons, and grapefruits. I hope I've provided you with the basic information for you to prepare yourself for the winters. Now let's move on and look over what's happening around the world.
Thank you, Ananya, for the Canadian news.
My name is Rajini and I will be wrapping up the show with news from around the world. We have some good news this week coming out of Oxford, England, where there has been progress in testing a new COVID vaccine. The vaccine, developed in partnership between AstraZeneca and the University of Oxford, has shown antibody responses in young and older adults, and fewer adverse reactions in elderly people. This is encouraging news as it points towards the safety of this new vaccine, which should hopefully allow for the relaxation of some COVID prevention restrictions. Should it succeed all clinical trials, this vaccine will become one of the first to secure approval alongside those from Pfizer and BioNTech. According to Global News, London hospitals have even been told to expect the first sample doses by next week, November 2nd. On a slightly darker note, anti-SARS protests continued last week in Nigeria, resulting in harsh crackdowns by the military and police. Protesters assembled at the Lekki toll gate to demonstrate against extrajudicial killings performed by the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, or SARS, on Tuesday, October 20th. This day will now be known as Black Tuesday, as at least 100 individuals had been killed due to brutal retaliation by the police. The government defended police action, however, citing concerns over large gatherings due to coronavirus restrictions on crowds. Lagos has since been placed on a statewide 24/7 curfew, and light and internet were disconnected briefly at the height of the protests. Protesters also reported that light had been cut immediately before soldiers began their attack. Despite the government officially disbanding SARS earlier on October 4th, it was only replaced with a different group known as SWAT. Nigerians fear that this will simply allow the brutality to continue, but under a different name, and worry that there will be no real change. On the other side of the world, an abandoned Venezuelan oil tanker threatens the entire southern Caribbean. The ship, known as Nabarima, has been stranded off the coast of Trinidad and Tobago and has begun listing severely. It has a capacity of 1.3 billion barrels of oil, the spilling of which could spell disaster for the entire southern Caribbean, including Barbados, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, and the Grenadines. These countries have heavily tourism-based economies, and an oil spill combined with the travel restrictions imposed due to the pandemic could be absolutely devastating. Worse still, water started to engulf the tanker, making oil removal an even more pressing issue. According to Forbes magazine, the spill from the Nabarima could be 5 times worse than the Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska in 1989, which was the worst oil spill in history until the 2010 spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The governments of Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela have entered talks to discuss how the oil will be removed, but Gary Aboud, Corporate Secretary of Fishermen and Friends of the Sea, a Trinidad and Tobago-based environmental group, worries that progress is not being made fast enough. His fears are not unfounded, as over 1 month remains in the Caribbean hurricane season, which has been one of the most active seasons on record. South Korea has revised a law that mandated jail time for those who refuse to join the military due to personal or religious reasons. Since South Korea is technically at war with North Korea, at least 21 months in the Army, 23 months in the Navy, or 24 months in the Air Force is required for all able-bodied men before they turn 28. Almost 20,000 Jehovah's Witnesses who declined to enlist due to religious beliefs had previously been required to spend 18 months in jail, a law that existed since 1950. This policy has had detrimental effects on their ability to find a career after jail and has led to their social ostracism. The new law instead allows them to become civil administrators in the prison. While they must eat, sleep, and work in the prison, they are allowed to leave for brief periods. They are also held separately from other inmates. While this has been touted as a progressive solution by the government, human rights groups argue that the 3 years of work required are simply another type of punishment. Finally, we will conclude with some news of elections south of the border. Polls show Joe Biden taking a clear lead in key swing states, including Pennsylvania and North Carolina, while Trump leads only in Ohio and Iowa. Part of the reason for Biden's lead has been cited as the Trump administration's shockingly bad response to the coronavirus pandemic, and their absolute negligence with which they have handled both the infection of the president and the VP's aides. Mike Pence's aide tested positive for COVID-19 this weekend, but this has not slowed their campaign activity. The chief of staff in the White House has even blatantly said that there is no plan in place to control the pandemic and gave highly unsatisfying answers when pressed. To make matters worse, Pence has not even followed or been required to follow quarantine, mask, and isolation policies, as his campaign activities are seen as essential work. It is clear that Americans are starting to see the reality of the situation, as there have been record turnouts of early voters, namely from California and Wisconsin. Predictions suggest that this year could have the highest election turnout since 1908. This election is not only a turning point for U.S. politics, but will have lasting impacts on the rest of the world. U.S.-China relations have already been severely weakened, and even a Biden win may not be able to turn them around. In the Caribbean, a Trump win would be devastating for the economies of most islands, especially in light of trade bans with China. China and the U.S. are important contributors to the Caribbean economy, and as such, trade bans and sanctions could spell disaster for economies already reeling from travel restrictions and less income from tourism. Similarly, Trump's environmental policies, or lack thereof, could leave the islands vulnerable to more intense hurricanes and storms, exacerbated by uncontrolled climate change.
Trump has spent the majority of his term in office repealing the policies of the Obama administration, namely withdrawing the U.S. from the Paris Accord, which placed responsibility on the U.S. for mitigating human-caused climate change. With rising sea levels, this becomes even more critical, as some low-lying islands could even cease to exist. On the other hand, Biden has proposed concrete plans to achieve a 100% clean energy economy and net zero emissions by 2050. It is therefore no surprise that Caribbeans in the US and at home are glued to their television sets in this critical time period. This has been Global News for Radio Laurier. As always, thank you for listening and have an awesome week.